Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is July 10th, 2017. So it's 7-10-2-17. That's an interesting date. Today we have with us a new vlogger on YouTube that I've recently been following. And his name is Jerome Hebert. We've been hassling for about the last 5-10 minutes trying to get him on the Skype. I don't know if he's still here with us. He was attempting to audio record his on the Google Plus, and I don't think that works. So I'm going to see if he's here again. Jerome, are you with us? Let me see if I can get him on the phone again. I don't think it works when you're on the Google Plus. If it doesn't work, I'm going to call him on his telephone. So how about that?
Hello.
Hey, Jerome, can you hear us? Jerome, can you hear us? We can see you and we can hear you. I don't think this is going to work on the Google Plus, Jerome. I'm going to give him a call back. Let me give him a phone call on his actual telephone. That'll get him. The phone lines usually work. We had this big brainstorm that we would have him do his Google Plus internet call, and we could record this. He could put this up, but that is obviously not going to work. I wasn't sure if it would work with the radio or not. So I'm going to give him a call on his cell phone. How about that? We'll connect with him one way or another. He's a really interesting man. I just recently started watching his videos. He basically has been reporting on Fukushima and the like, and it's been quite an interesting little journey. So let's see if we can get through to him.
Good morning. You got me.
Oh, Jerome. Yeah, the phone line's always like the solid thing. I have a feeling, I think that the Skype doesn't let you do the Google Plus recording. I think it overrides your audio. That's us not knowing
technical stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what the bottom line is. Yeah, I think that's it. So welcome to the show. We're on the air. You've joined us for the first time. I hope you come back to with us on the Age of Fission radio show.
Absolutely.
Well, Jerome, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, you know, because you're kind of a new vlogger about Fukushima. You've all of a sudden, I tend to be looking on the YouTube for vloggers on Fukushima all the time to try to understand who's out there making videos and trying to alert the world. So basically, I'd like to ask you, what prompted you to start making videos? Because your videos are just very thoughtful. You seem to understand the science. What made you decide to start doing this?
Well, Lonnie, since I was a young man, way back in the days when the Rocky Mountain Arsenal was still not even decommissioned completely yet, and they had a basin, they called it Basin F out at Rocky Mountain Arsenal, which is full of the remnants from nerve gas and DDT production.
And you're they were in Colorado then?
Yes. And they were literally taking this material, and to dry it, they were just literally flinging it in the air and flinging it in the air to dry it. And I got livid over that, and people were getting sick in Commerce City right next door. And I became very active. That was before the internet. I was literally downtown Denver at the EPA building fighting with those people. I was fighting with the Army and the Department of Defense. And that spirit, and then they cleaned it up and they got it right. And then that spirit kind of went away, and nothing seemed as pertinent to me until Fukushima. And I got a little more involved in that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the end. This is the end. What are we doing here? You know? And I honestly, I see a lot of the bloggers that you refer to, and they're so reactionary, and it's so confusing trying to get any real information, and I don't see links, and I felt like, you know what, somebody needs to approach this in a calm, rational, scientific manner and really try to address this in a way that people can understand it, that they can move forward in their lives with that information, with proper information, and not being either reacted to, oh, there's nothing to see here, or on the other hand, oh my God, life is over. Yeah, life is over, but you know what? We're not dead yet. That's my point.
Exactly. So that's my point.
Environmentalist.
Yeah. Know, well, the name of your blog is called. The name of your blog is called The Sane Environmentalist. Right.
Yes.
Do people need to put in the sane, or is it just sane environmentalist?
You know what? You can probably do either way. If you're
I'm fine.
I think I'm literally the only one out there that calls myself that for some reason.
Okay.
You know, okay. I actually have to give credit to the same progressive. Her name is Debbie Lusignan. She's another YouTuber, but you know, she's trying to like bring some sanity in the modern American political dialogue is her theme. You know, I'm trying to bring sanity into modern nuclear disaster dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to give a shout out to her. I didn't steal it from her because it's a whole different thing, but still, she inspired me that way.
Well, I do have to say that the whole thing about Fukushima is just such kind of a shock. You know, like when you first find out about it, I didn't actually understand it until 2012. And here we are, 2017. I mean, I've been engaged in it 5 years. I actually cannot believe it's been 5 years since this is. And I have to say, it kind of has consumed a lot of my life, because I think this is like a massive, massive emergency. I mean, we are falling off the cliff as we speak. I mean, if you go to ENE News, the news is the levels of radioactivity, the radioactive contamination in the water there is higher than it has ever been, ever.
Yeah, I literally just did a video right about that exact thing. You know, and people yelled at me, ENE News, that's just a propaganda site. It's like, you know what? And another thing, and this is important for everybody to try to understand. Don't discount the information because of the source. Don't say, oh, look at that source. I don't want to hear anything they have to say, because you're shutting yourself off from potentially important information. But weigh and balance the information against other information to know that it's true or not. You know, and so ENE News, that article, I followed it. I followed the link. I followed another link, and came up with the actual data that, this is how many becquerels are finding in well one, and this is how many becquerels are finding in well two. And thank you, ENE News, for the heads up. I thought, people can yell about that, but you know what? We're trying, man. We're all just trying.
You know, ENE News is actually very mild compared to what they could report. There's very little reporting, and I think it has to do that there's not very many people manning the ship there. Another really great source is Sean McKee's website called nuclear-news.net. That's what it is. I interviewed him actually the Saturday before Jules had her medical emergency. And so I have not put up his interview because I'm in, you know, I just didn't want to. We've sort of been on automated the last 2 weeks. So hopefully we'll have his interview out soon. But there are actually some very good sources who do source, who do things. The issue is people get frustrated because there's nothing happening. Like, people rant and rave. They get mad because there's so little movement. Like, no matter what we do, it doesn't matter. There's no emergency. In fact, they're digging in for the gold. They're going in deep. I mean, our government, did you read that Chernobyl is actually going to be putting in a theme park in Chernobyl, despite the radioactive contamination, the fears of radioactive contamination? They're going to be putting in a theme park. I read that this weekend. So
you would think of all people, the Russians would know about that crap.
They do know. And what they're attempting to do, though.
Well, they're trying to revive that piece of property. They're broke. Everybody's broke. The oligarchs have stolen all the money, and that includes from the Russians. Okay? Don't think the Russians or the Chinese or the Japanese or the Americans or any of us are not fully and completely owned by a very small handful of people at the top that make all of the decisions. And until we as a top population rise up against this and say, no, you know what? Shut down all the nuclear plants. If everybody stands up at the same time and goes, you know what? No. No. You know what? I'm not paying any more tax money until you shut all these nuclear plants down and decommission them and get rid of it.
Yeah, you know how hard it is. There's a lot of people, and I spend time, you know, having discussions with them. There's people that have been brainwashed to truly believe that nuclear is a good thing, for real. Plus, they make $80,000 a year as a janitor. You know what I mean? Let's just get real. They make more money than anybody else. They get to hobnob and be a little bit of snobby. And, you know, they love their, and they don't mind. I mean, Glenn Woodford was on this show talking about one of his relatives who had a baby born with a jelly bean head, basically a big thing on its head. And
yeah, I saw a photograph of a couple babies like that. What is that? Is that an external brain?
No, it's encephaly. It's like the brain. Yeah, something like that. Hematoma. And these anomalies are extremely common among babies exposed to radioactivity. But the doctors, just like in Japan, the doctors are denying it. Like, they are saying it's not caused by nuclear. So, I mean, this is an interesting thing. You've been paying attention to nuclear for how long?
Since it started, pretty much.
Yeah,
I'm 55, so I was around actually my mom got dosed way harder than I did because of all the testing they did back in her heyday when she was having me. So I think maybe I got lucky that
are
I
Are there any other children? Do you have other siblings?
Yeah, I've got two sisters and I've got a brother. My brother's 10 years older than me. He's still healthy.
What about their children? Any of those children have anomalies?
Nieces and nephews are beautiful. And their kids are beautiful.
And no diabetes, so, no schizophrenia.
No diabetes. Everybody's got ADHD and addiction issues. But that's part of the older genetics that before nuclear, I think, you know.
I don't know.
We're lucky. I really think it is just a matter of luck. And given that I grew up in Denver, Colorado, down the street from Lucky Flats, literally, where they're building the plutonium triggers for these bombs, right? God. And it's in the air. The air blows up and down the Front Range. Trust me, it does. It blows either north or south. It doesn't blow east and west. You've got a 14,000 tall foot range of mountains there to stop that. It may circulate east and west a little, but it blows north and south. So, I'm sure Rocky has dosed this entire zone with tons of, well, probably pounds of plutonium.
Have you ever taken a Geiger counter out there?
No, I got to get one. Today I decided I need to get a Geiger counter. Somehow I need to overcome homelessness and get a Geiger counter.
Well, you will. That's the, you know, your thoughts are things. So just, you know, you'll make that happen. You know, you're not homeless yet. And a Geiger counter is not like burning down the bridge. But I just was wondering, because when I mean, I didn't know about it when my short stint in Boulder, I probably could have tested. But, you know, we went hiking. My stepson and I went hiking with his science class. We climbed up a mountain. When I looked at the map, like, I don't know, we might have been exposed. Although, you know, what did Helen Caldicott say? Dr. Caldicott said that the incubation period is 4 to 80 years. So we really, like a lot of the older people that have problems now, a lot of it comes from them having been exposed as children themselves, because prior to the 40s, they used to test every single baby on x-rays, high levels, 600 doses of, you know, radioactivity.
They used to zap pregnant moms. Mm-hmm. And that, mm-hmm. You know what it is, Lonnie? I think I had a theory. Okay, I think that human DNA, thank God, thanks to God, thanks to whatever, is so extremely complex that it takes a lot to damage it. It takes a lot to damage it. It heals itself. It repairs itself. And it's doing this the whole time as you're damaging it. But I think it's a cumulative thing. I think that once there's enough damage in enough places at the same time, the repair process just can't work. And then you start getting cancer, and then you start getting heart disease, and then you start getting brain diseases, you know, and then you start getting muscular diseases and diabetes.
Well, I think it's kind of the other way around. Like, I think the muscular, cancer is like the end result, right? So, but we first, you know, the first signs, according to Dr. John Goffman, in his book, Poison Power, he says the first signs are diabetes, schizophrenia, and confusion. People get confused. Those are the first signs of constant low-level radioactivity. And actually, Dr. Busby, one of his newest works, shows that low-level exposure, they always say low-level dosage isn't that hard, you know, on the human body. But Dr. Busby's proof is that really it is just as harmful as high level. So the answer is no. And we're beyond that, though, the no exposure level, because we have it. We're here. We're in the stew.
We are walking around in an x-ray machine, living our lives in an x-ray machine.
We got
frequency radio device against our head half the times. Think about it. You got microwave ovens everywhere we go. Have you ever even thought about a cell phone tower and what that does? Have you ever even thought about it? Why you can't even get within 20 feet of them if they're operating? There's a big sign that says, warning, radiation, don't come here, you'll fry, and you will. Okay, that's 20 feet away. Apparently, it's okay to be 24 feet away, though, because I can walk right up to the fence, but I'll tell you, I can feel it in my teeth. I can feel it in my fillings, in my teeth, a metallic flavor. That's how I know I'm getting irradiated with high-frequency radio waves, because I can taste them. I know that may sound weird, but and even a little paranoid, but we live in a microwave oven right now, and we're being given constant x-rays. So as a species...
I'm not sure I like that analogy there, Jerome. I got rid of my microwave a long time ago. To tell me I'm living in the oven is like, error. That's really...
Well, you know what? If you could just for 1 minute see radio waves... Okay, and other spectrums of above the visible light range, you would freak out at how many radio waves there are in our environment and how much energy all the things around us put out in the form of electromagnetic energy that we don't see. Good or bad, I don't know. I've only got to say that there wasn't this much cancer before there was electricity, you know. But then again, who really knows, because who was documenting?
Well, they're not testing. The cancer comes directly from radioactivity. You can overlay the chart maps, you know, the any type of a plot, you know, a graph or a plot chart or anything, you can overlay the two, radioactive testing and discoveries and cancer, and you put them right on top of each other. Just like when I first got engaged in this, just kind of as an exercise, I printed out where all the nuclear power facilities were and where all the cancer clusters were in the United States, and they are identical. Identical.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
I mean, it's not a scientific proof. Do you know what I'm saying? But that's also one of the things that, like in St. Louis, that they're doing is they are.
To me, that is a scientific proof because you went and you studied the epidemiology and you studied the locations of power plants and you put the two together on a map. You know what they call that? They call that science. And when you come to the conclusion and say, okay, I see A plus B equals C, this is my theory, that's not, my, I mean, until 50 other people do the same thing and say, okay, we can't disprove that, then as far as everybody knows, that is what it is.
You know,
it is what it is until somebody can disprove it.
Well, you know, the other thing that is interesting also is, and this came up in the studies in St. Louis, this big gap on how we, when cancer patients get identified, they're identified on this, like if me, right now I'm living in Oregon. If I was to get cancer, the statistics would say Oregon, I live in Oregon, so this is, you know, Oregon has the highest rate of cancer, me and everybody else here. However, I was born in Los Angeles, not far from the very first nuclear meltdown on our planet. So that's actually one of the things we found out in St. Louis is they're not tracking where were you born, what was your exposure as a child. Again, it goes back to this 4 to 80 year lag time before the exposure shows up, right? So even our, quote, scientific testing is sorely lacking in evidence on what's the cause, because in St. Louis, one of the things they noticed, in fact, it was the scientists, the people who had gone to school and were really esteemed scientists in St. Louis who were getting cancer, but they were living in Chicago and in California and Arizona, and they reconnected on Facebook as friends, and they all realized, hey, we all have like the same weird diseases. And then they did a little bit of research, and that's when they discovered, wait a minute, somebody came across it that there was 200,000 tons of high-grade uranium buried illegally and secretly in the backyards of all these people in this neighborhood where they all grew up together as kids. So they all grew up, got their education. Nobody knew. They were all playing in the creek. They were all contaminated. The one factor was that they all played in the creek, all of them. And that's how they found out. This is really like, this is the shock. This is how disregarding our government. In fact, it's not just us. It's the whole entire International Atomic Energy Agency. They do not have a safety culture model. They're nothing but liars. And the complete disregard for human life.
They're money makers, and they are beholden to the same small handful of people that I was talking about earlier. And that would, and I'm sorry to say it, but that would include the whole green energy people. You know, and I love the idea of solar energy. I think it is the future. But anybody that says that it's a purely green energy is silly, because you need oil and you need to mine that stuff and you need to process it. You need to build those panels. You need those minerals. It takes oil to get those minerals out of the ground in the first place. And so
it also takes uranium, but it uses way, way less. Let's just put, we could do it. The whole thing is we could do it cleaner and better. We could do a lot of things a lot better.
That's what people don't get. There is no global warming. It isn't this thing. Yeah, the planet is warming. Thank God it's getting its carbon back. Soon it will be beautiful and lush and green again, as long as we don't destroy life. Okay, yeah, we may have to move inland. Yeah, Florida will be gone. So what? Who likes Florida anyway? You know, move your retirement to Georgia and South Carolina.
People that live in Florida like Florida, Jerome.
You know, then they'll have coastline right there in South Carolina, you know? I mean,
so that's an interesting theory. So you think we don't have enough carbon?
I think that historically, and think about this, plants adapted to grow in an atmosphere of 1,800 parts per million of CO2. If you want ultimate plant growth, and I take it from me, I'm an old grower from way back, you want at least 1,800 parts per million of CO2, and the plants just go nuts. The growth rate doubles harvests double, okay, versus just regular atmospheric CO2. The reason for that is that all the carbon is locked up in the form of coal and oil after the giant asteroid impact killed everything, and everything got buried and then sedimentized, and now they're vitrified into oil and other hydrocarbons. That, in my opinion, is the fluid or the blood of the Earth, and it has plenty of oxygen. Now it needs the carbon back so it can start creating life from this carbon. And I think that the Earth evolved us specifically to the only way that it could extract that carbon again and get it back into the atmosphere so plants can do well is by having some clever little organism that digs it up and burns it and puts it back into the air. That's my theory on global warming, and I promote the oil industry. Yes, it's filthy. Yes. And in the short term, terrible. But in the big picture, the Earth needs its carbon back, so we go from a 6% green band to a 60% green band. You know, instead of just a little strip of rainforest, it'll be the rainforest will be a third of the planet because it can support that. Right now, literally, the planet can almost not support plant life. If you lower the carbon any more than is ambient, okay, if you lower the carbon from what it is right now and try to grow plants, they'll do terribly at all, okay? People don't understand that. And do your research, look at the history of this planet to understand what it was like before that big asteroid hit. It was green and lush and giant creatures. Giant creatures means lots of food stuff and a healthy ecosystem. You know, small creatures means limited food and an unhealthy ecosystem. You know, and that's why we have so many little small creatures now versus the giants of the old day, because there's not enough carbon to provide enough living matter, because the carbon gets converted directly into living matter. It falls out of it, or it gets sucked out of the atmosphere by the plants, eaten by the animals, which grow bigger, and it just feeds the entire ecosystem. And that's just my estimation of it, and that's my theory. And until somebody can disprove it to me, I'm going to consider it correct. Good luck disproving that theory, by the way. Look at the post.
Well, I think one of the things that we have not done is ignore 80 years of nuclear pollution's effect on our biota. I think that is, frankly, one of the worst things that's happened, that no one ever says, oh, it's because of all the nuclear testing. Oh, it's because of the leaking nuclear power plants. I mean, we have ongoing Fukushima, which is the world's greatest ecological disaster ever, nonstop, going on for 6 years now, over 6 years. And ironically, not only is the world ignoring it, they're going to be putting on their Olympics there. That's beyond comprehension that they're going to do that. Baseball is going to be played in Fukushima Prefecture.
For real. I was doing a Google Earth survey around the site, and there's a little town, I think it's like 20 miles from Fukushima, from the power plant.
Futaba.
And I zoomed in on this town, and there's people walking around, and they're making peace signs at the Google car as it goes by, and there's a park to the left. Oh, look, there's a whole bunch of little kids sitting in the dirt, digging with shovels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
20 miles. And they looked at the plume, and the plume went right over there. Biggest, heaviest dose is right over there. They scooped up the soil, and they're telling everybody it's safe, and they put inaccurate Geiger counters all over the place to make people feel like there's no radiation, but it is a gigantic mind game. Okay, and the people of Japan are dying from it, and they will die from it, because there's nothing that can change that, because the oligarchy is in control of it, and there's literally nothing we can do. They will not make a move on that plant. They can't. They can't even get close. They can't even get into the buildings of reactors 1 and 2. If you look at reactor 1 today, they put a pretty white tent around it, but it's still a collapsed, caved in. They can't even get close enough to remove the roofing from the spent fuel pool. They have no idea what the status. They think, no, I guess there's water in it. There hasn't really been a fire. I mean, the reactor melted down. We know that has to be the case, but we really can't tell because we can't get close enough to even look at it. And our robots are 1,000 sievert per hour. Robots are dying in an hour and 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only 500 becquerels, 540. No, there's 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, unimaginable levels of radiation. And I believe still there is some fissioning going on under there, under one, under two, and especially under three. Definitely there's some fissioning occurring, and therefore you're having the creation of more of the daughter products, okay? The whole melt to the earth thing, no, I think that it's probably stopped somewhere. It's not hot enough to do that. They've dumped enough water on it. But inside that molten ball or semi-molten ball is fissioning. And keep in mind, just the radiation from that molten ball will melt through the earth. That's how radioactive it is. It will literally turn matter into nothing, and the water will wash it away as dust, highly radioactive dust. And it'll just sink another little bit, and it'll sink another little bit just from the weight of it and the vicious radioactivity of it. So, yeah, what we need is some sort of alien technology to create a giant scoop and scoop that entire section of the earth and throw it into the sun.
And yeah.
Hope it doesn't fuck up. You know, I mean,
throw it into the sun. Well, you know, they're about to crash. September 15th is the date that the Cassini with 72 pounds of plutonium is going to crash into Jupiter. So that's going to be an interesting.
Really?
Yes. It's been headed towards. Isn't it Saturn? Saturn is the one with rings, right? So it's going to be Saturn, the one with rings. So it's headed, it's in its atmosphere, September 15th, it's actually going to crash land. But 72 pounds of plutonium, that's a huge crime against the universe.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, is a critical mass of plutonium?
You're talking to probably the most non-scientific person you'll meet in a long time. I mean, I've been doing this, as I said, 5 years, and I barely get to
get it. Put it in the right shape. Is a critical mass of plutonium. It could create a nuclear explosion. And it is just as nasty today as the day they launched that spaceship. So,
well, their theory was that it is a planet full of radioactivity anyways. So it's not going to make that much difference. It's going to melt into all the other stuff, and don't worry about it. It's going to be fine, perfectly fine. And they're taking pictures as they go. Yeah, and they're taking pictures.
Oh, and they're taking pictures?
Yeah. You can go to NASA.
Well, that should be interesting. I'll be analyzing that. That's the, you know, like, yeah, there's no chance that we could, it doesn't matter if we damage the environment of that planet, because as far as we know, there's no life there and no possibility of life. Although we're so primitive, how would we know?
Right. That's right.
We overestimate ourselves. That's what this whole nuclear thing, that's the biggest problem, is that humanity as a species overestimated ourselves. We said, this is wonderful. Let's do it, go, 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 yeah, go. Oops. Now we're at the oops. So what? Now we're at the oops stage. We're screwed. What do we do now? You know, photo remediation is what I would recommend. We need to figure out a way to create a gamma laser.
You mean phytoremediation using plants?
No. Photo. Okay.
What's that?
And photo remediation basically uses gamma radiation, alrighty, and highly focused gamma radiation on whatever object or whatever it is that is contaminated. And it blows neutrons off of the atoms of these nuclides, like plutonium, for instance. It'll blow 3 or 4 neutrons off a plutonium atom and then replace those neutrons with its own weird force, okay? And then as soon as you remove the laser, now you have a super, super unstable plutonium atom, which like within 50 days degrades into nothing. And it also doesn't degrade radioactively. As soon as it's breaks from plutonium, it's not like, oh, God, now we got cesium and iodine and this and that. No, it's just this. So within 54 days, they have neutralized plutonium using this photo remediation of nuclear materials. And so they've figured out a way to literally blow nuclear materials apart without fissioning them, just making them unstable and then letting them alone, and then they just half-life much, much, much more quickly. I mean, it's extremely radioactive, and there's probably a huge amount of a burst of neutron and gamma radiation that is involved with that, and a lot of heat, but you could do it, and you could do it safely. We're smart enough. If we can build this plant, we can build one of those devices.
Well, I know Shaziz, who I've interviewed on this show once. I did not ask him back because I really don't have the scientific knowledge to ask intelligent questions on this one. But on his website, Shaziz.com, he does offer solutions, and he says that they do have answers for all of this, that there is a way to turn it all around, but for, you know, their own specific purposes of greed and avarice, they have no, like, I personally believe that they are actually waiting for a lot of people to drop off dead. Like, they're trying to cleanse the planet of a lot of things. But in the meantime, they're killing the oceans. And I think because they have neglected the negative effects of radioactive waste, and I don't like to call it waste because it's not waste, it's contamination. It's not wasted, it's contamination. The fact that it's affecting at a very small microbiotic level, it's killing, like in Chernobyl, there, what Dr. Mousseau discovered is that there is actually no life in the dirt in Chernobyl. The trees there, yeah, they look beautiful, but they've been there for 20 years. They have not decomposed. It's the same trees, the same leaves. They have fires all the time. It's a bizarre, like, step into Twilight Zone kind of a land, you know? And I think that for them to neglect how this is affecting our planet. Huh?
Yeah, like all the bags of soil from Fukushima.
Yeah.
Basically, the radiation in that soil will sterilize it. And so what their whole plan is, quote unquote, is to take the soil, encapsulate it, wait for, what is it, 300 years, and then you can use it again. But in 300 years, the radiation will have destroyed any and all living things within that soil, and it will basically just be like Mars soil. You'll have to literally re-enliven it with microorganisms in order to have it work at all. It won't work at all, not even a little. You might be able to use chemical fertilizers with plants, but they won't grow well. You know, soil needs a whole microcosm of different organisms and things to move matter around and move nutrients around and make nutrients available to plants in magical ways that we don't, as people, see and therefore usually don't pay attention to.
Well, the whole idea of bagging the dirt is ridiculous.
It's where we are as this gigantic continuing plume of high levels of radioactivity will continue to go out in all directions evenly over the years. Probably we're at 6 now, and I would say that the map that I saw that euphemistically stopped like 90 days after the plume started, that red map, mm-hmm. You know, carry that map out 6 years and then look at the hot spot in the Pacific. Tell me we are not creating a gigantic, very, very, very low-level nuclear reactor inside of our oceans, mm-hmm. Moderated by salt water, you know? And why do we have a hot spot where all the nuclides are collecting? Well, I think it's because they're at a very low level fissioning. You know, something is going on there. We've never experimented to see what would happen if you put 100, you know, billion becquerels radiation in a giant pool of salt water. What would happen? Will it react? I don't know. It could. Why couldn't it? You know, if you get two uranium atoms close enough to each other in a properly moderated environment, they will fission. I mean, a single uranium atom will fission if it's hit with a neutron. And that produces, boom, a lot of heat instantly, maybe on the atomic level, but and maybe wouldn't even produce a signature of light that you could perceive. It might be too fast for a light signature. And so the only way that you could perceive it would be with temperature, because it's a slow disintegration happening all over the place, slowly but surely raising the temperature of the water, which causes the food chain to collapse, not from radiation, but from temperature-induced changes in the water by the radiation. Does that make sense? So it's not just, oh, my God, radiation's going to kill us because it's going to damage us. It's, oh, my God, radiation is going to literally heat up the oceans and kill all the life. And, I mean, think about it. They've already canceled the fishing season after 4 days, 7 days, something like that.
Oh, it's been closed a long time. Sardines on the West Coast, there's no sardines. Huge die-off here in Oregon. Kevin Blanch recently reported it. I mean, there was, what, 8 dead whales up in Canada found. I mean, it's beyond conscionable ignoring how we ignore the cries of the wildlife. You know, it's our oceans are in crisis. The coral reefs are dying.
It is being hidden from us, okay? Don't put this on everyday people, because everyday people are victims, all right? You can't say, as people, we're ignoring it, because we have been hidden. It's been hidden from us. That's why people like you and I are so important, because we are putting people off of ignore into knowledge, okay? And once you have knowledge, if you choose to ignore the knowledge, well, then that's a moral judgment, all right? So if you catch somebody's attention, give them a little knowledge, you might be surprised at how that unfolds in their life. You know, and they do start paying attention. I mean, if every person in the state of New York started blowing the phones off of Congress, okay, and the House and the mayor's office and everybody, they could get all the nuclear plants shut down within a week, 2 weeks. Well, okay, yeah, okay, we can build a new coal plant pretty quick. All right, shut them down. People are freaking out. They're going to stop paying taxes, or something bad's going to happen. We knew this could happen, but we didn't think it would, because people are such sheeple. Think about how they're thinking. They're not thinking about our safety or our health. They're thinking about their money. No, they're thinking about their boss's money. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Toshiba, General Electric, the United States government, the United States Army are all working for somebody else. And it's not you, and it's not me. But it is really you and me. Thank God we have our Constitution. And if we stand up as American citizens, we can actually create change. But people have been...
Speaking of creating change, distracted. I really have to say this. We have 15 minutes left. And I'm going to be, like, pounding the drum on this until I hear that this bill is dead. Shimkus H.R. 3053, Nuclear Waste Policy Amendment Act of 2017, preempts state and local water and air rights, federal rights, and other rights. Eliminates safety requirements for critical for preventing radioactive leaks. Eliminates requirements for a permanent repository before contracting for consolidated interim storage facilities. Pays millions of dollars annually from the Nuclear Waste Fund for both permanent and interim facilities, even if no waste is ever stored. Eliminates requirements for monitored retrievable fuel storage in spite of calling it monitored retrievable fuel storage. Eliminates environmental impact reports. Allows monitored retrievable storage facilities to store and transport existing thin wall casks that cannot be inspected, maintained, repaired, or monitored to prevent leaks. And allows these same facilities no adequate plan to replace leaking canisters. That is active legislation that is going through the House when they come back from the holiday, which is starting this week. So every person listening to this show needs to pick up the phone or send a letter and call their congressperson, because that's who's voting on it, is your congressperson, and say, stop the Nuclear Waste Policy Amendment Act. Yes, what we have right now is inadequate, but this, while it will save us money, is a disaster in the future, and it is death. And you have to tell them that you will not vote for them if they say yes to this. This takes away our water rights, folks. This is huge, 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 huge. Takes away. If you don't want to have a nuclear waste facility, storage facility in your community, if this passes, you have no choice. None. Zero. Not even the federal government has the right to say, oh, that we don't want it here. The facility, the person, could you imagine giving Exelon or Entergy all the nuclear waste and saying, you can go put this anywhere you want? And that's exactly what this bill is going to do.
And even more scarily, and the oligarchs love this part, the liability to these companies has been limited to what? I think $10 million?
Something stupid. In the event of an 110. It's 110, I think, something like that. But it's still very, that's nothing compared to what it should be. Not only that, you know what the Nuclear Waste Safety Act is going to do? This Nuclear Waste Policy Amendment Act of 17 is going to do? It allows them to pay a one-time fee to limit their liability. That's it. One-time fee, and then they're off the hook completely, forever. For real.
Yeah, well, who's on the hook then? The same people being poisoned.
Excuse me?
We need to stand up. You're right.
I mean, we have to call our Congress people. We have to get everybody that we know, especially in red states, people that have Republican Congress people, we have to put pressure on them and say, look, I don't, and send them to SantaNoFreeSafety.org. Say, look, if you want to find out real information, this really find it out, because you can't refute the facts. And most Congress people, they're seeing this as a streamlined thing. They're being sold. It's being sold as saving the government billions. This will relieve the government of the responsibility. But what it's doing, they're going to be relieved of their responsibility, but this is not something the government needs to be relieved of. These nuclear power facilities have been shoved down our throats. You built it, you own it, you know?
You know, I remember I grew up basically when they first started coming out with these plants, before there was any problems. And I remember as a child learning about nuclear power and thinking, wow, that's pretty cool. And we didn't worry about green back then at all because, you know, that was the 60s. But as far as free energy, it seemed like free energy from the atom. Wow. You know, my dad was in the Air Force. He died of heart disease. He's the only one that died of heart disease, but he was in the Air Force. He was part of Cheyenne Mountain, designing and building and engineering that. And the whole, he was a missile man. He worked with missiles. So I'm sure he worked with nuclear stuff. And he probably got poisoned and it gave him heart disease, because my heart's fine, my brother's heart's fine, my older sister's heart's fine. But my mom died of heart disease as well, though. Mm. So, but I'm 55 and I went in for a surgery recently, and the nurse at the surgery was like, is your blood pressure normally low? I'm like, what? No, I don't know. Is it low? She's like, no, it's actually low normal, but wow. I'm like, well, I ride a bike everywhere. I barely eat. I'm poor.
Well, it's like me. I thought I had I had symptoms of a heart attack recently, and I went in. It turns out I strained my back, but, you know, it kind of made me mad. I went in, and I thought I was having a heart attack. They took my blood pressure. It was 110 over 66. They're like, yeah, sit down. And I'm like, what? I'm having a heart attack. Took them, you know, I went to another hospital. They got me in right away. It turns out I wasn't having a heart attack. I just had extreme severe muscle spasms in front of my heart that turns out to be slight. I mean, even my slightly larger heart, I was born near the first nuclear explosion that ever happened. You know, right, my mother was pregnant with me around that same time. So who knows if this fact that I have like one size larger too hard for the size of my body, that could, this is my biggest frustration with this whole industry, is they don't test. They just don't, they're not interested. They don't want to find out. There's no studies. There's no methodology. There's no science. The International Atomic Energy Agency squashes any real testing going on at all. And that's the worst part. That is what I think is absolutely the worst part.
And even people like me, you know, when I first I've been on YouTube for a year or so, and I had almost no views before I became frustrated and started focusing on Fukushima and the nuclear industry in general. And right away, even though I don't know if you've watched my videos, they're not political in any way. People are yelling at me. They're yelling at me for the sources I'm using and this and that.
Somebody, you kind of have to get over the yelling on the YouTube.
A nuclear apologist, and I'm like, what? You mean this guy screaming and shouting against everything nuclear is a nuclear apologist? He's made his money off the nuclear. I'll give him that. You know, but by the time he figured out it's evil, he quit. That says something for his integrity. Okay, a person of integrity could not continue to operate in that industry with any sort of moral compass that would be like, well, yeah. Just think about it. Every nuclear accident that has ever occurred on our planet is a result of human error. In Chernobyl, it had two brand new guys, one guy in the generator room and one guy in the control room, and okay, we're having this test, and drop the rods. Well, nothing's happening. Well, drop them the rest of the way. Oh, well, something's happening now. Put them back in. Put them back. Boom. Human error. 3 Mile Island. Human error. Fukushima, human error. It's all the same thing. What does it boil down to? It boils down to, if you're willing to be the person that sits there at the controls of this monster and allow it to continue, then you have lost your moral compass because you are endangering the rest of humanity and participating in that activity. I really don't know how else to put it. This is a eugenics program. But it makes no sense because it's going to make the place unlivable afterwards. That makes, unless they have some magic technology that gets rid of radiation, and they're like, you know what, we're going to take our
technology. Shazus says they do have. Shazus says they have it, Jerome.
Yeah, and then we're going to go underground for 50 years until everybody dies of cancer and shit, and then we're going to come back up with our seeds and our little critters and stuff in our Noah's Ark, and first use our technology to clean all the radiation and get rid of these nasty power plants, and then move on. And in 100 years, things will recover. I mean, if you removed humanity from this planet for 100 years, it would be unrecognizable in its grandeur and beauty. We literally destroy the environment just to exist, and it's so sad. That's why I think we're aliens. We're alien to this environment. That's why we destroy it. Every other species on the planet lives in harmony with the environment, except for humanity, which indubitably needs to destroy the environment. You know, I had to cut down trees. How much silicon did I need to have this conversation with you? The walls around me, my house, the land my house is sitting on, this used to be a prairie. Not anymore. It's now an unlivable with a little bit of grass, but not an ecosystem at all. Anything natural gets eaten by my cat. So do you see what I'm saying? In order to survive, even though I'm a good person and I love the planet, as a human, I can't go and live in the woods with just my wits and catch prey and survive. Can't do it because I'm not of this place. I need tools. Just my thoughts on that.
That's an interesting theory that we're actually aliens. That's an interesting little theory. You know, there are a lot of people who believe we were mixed with the aliens. Like humans and aliens are sort of what we have now is a mixture of aliens, right? Of alien species. So. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, this is the interesting thing.
Back in the day, when you had just Cro-Magnon before Neanderthal? But back before you had the upright, walking, blonde, white, light-skinned, almost hairless creatures that we call Homo erectus, you had hunched-over, ape-like, simple, but perhaps if you were a space alien, kind of sexy critters. If you clean them up, you could probably fuck them, and they'll fuck anybody, and they're crazy.
That's so hilarious. We went somewhere. The space people would think the animals were sexy. That's hilarious.
Oops. Well, actually, we got 10 of them pregnant. What? Who would have known that? Well,
I don't think it was an accident. If they got any species pregnant, it was not an accident.
Or Logan, let's take and evolve these things and see what happens. That's the kind of experiment that we as humans would perform. Would we not?
I mean, it's interesting, but these are all anthropogenic points of view. Jerome, that's a purely anthropogenic point of view. That's the thing, is like, it's still a point of view that a human is thinking about. I mean, who knows? I mean, what's happened is we're living in a time really where they're fiddling while Rome is burning. Like, they really literally have destroyed the planet, and instead they're pretending like everything's great, just great, you know?
But they're also using the technology that they're providing us to distract us to the point where we can't really pay attention very well. And I just did a video on YouTube about that, about distraction. We are so distracted, you know, by everything around us, you know, and I mean the whole fake news thing, think about it. That is part of the distraction plan. It's like, keep them, it doesn't even matter if it makes sense or if it's real. Just throw it out there. Get their brain to wrap around it. Get them pissed off about it, and then you'll get a little more of their attention. And so what we're doing is we're distracted to the point where we aren't even able to understand the importance of Fukushima as a population. The people I talk to in my daily life either A, don't even understand or know what Fukushima is, or B, kind of know, but you know what? I don't want to talk about that. It makes me uncomfortable. Very few people in my life, in my world, are willing to talk about it. I almost consider it a taboo subject.
You know what, Jerome? I think we're about to get cut off. I think that this radio station cuts us off at 8:57 now. So if we're cut off, I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you'll come back. And I'm going to encourage everyone to put your courage beyond. We're supposed to go to 59, so I'm going to wait and see. So I just realized Friday that's what's been happening, is we get cut off around 57 or 58. So maybe they'll cut us off shortly. So I don't know if they've rebooted it and fixed it, but we've passed the 57 mark, so we're not getting cut off. I wanted to read a little bit from this Weinberg thing. Alvin Weinberg gave a speech in 1972, and it was not released until the 2000s, where he says, "We nuclear people have made a Faustian bargain with society. On one hand, we offer in the Breeder reactor an almost inexhaustible source of energy. Even in the short range, when we use ordinary reactors, we offer energy that is cheaper than energy fuel." This is their lies. "But that price we demand of society for this magical source is both a vigilance and a longevity of our social institutions, of which we are not accustomed." That's what it means, is we have to look after this stuff forever. You know what I mean? And they're not doing a very good job of it, I'd say. And this is why we're on the air. This is why we're vigilant.
The fuel assembly.
That's it.
Will remain. Well,
Jerome, let me re-say your name. It's called the Environment, the Sane Environmentalist.
The Sane Environmentalist. Yes.
Great.
And thank you so much. And anytime you want me back, I'm going to be available to you, because this is a bigger picture thing. And thank you for your efforts as well.
This is a bigger picture, and it looks like we're going to go to the full 8:59. Looks like they put the show back on set. Jules must have her hands back in the pie, so to speak. I haven't heard from her since she got out of the hospital. But this... I will have you back on, because we do need somebody who can speak clearly and rationally. Maybe the next time you come on, we can talk specifics on specific plants, because it's not just Fukushima. It's a lot. The whole nuclear industry is just a complete disaster. I mean, look around. Any nuclear facility you know about, they're having big issues. So we have to lead into it. Guys, against the Nuclear Waste Amendment Act of 2017. Call your Congress. Talk to you guys later.